Ichiro this morning. He wants to know how you're doing. Mike offered up a shrug. I didn't know what to tell him.
Dude, we've gone over this. I wasn't in the mood to go around with Mike. My night had been long, and my sleep was too often disturbed by the aching skin on my thigh. Why do you have to tell him anything?
Because he asked about you. He's our brother, remember?
Ichiro, our half-brother. The one our mother raised in Japan after she supposedly died while giving birth to me. Jesus had nothing on Ryoko McGinnis Tokugawa.
Mike had been trying to shoehorn me into a relationship with Ichiro ever since we'd found out he existed. I wasn't interested. Not now. Maybe not ever. I needed to wrap my head around being tossed out by not just one mother, but two. It hurt too much to think about, so I did what I usually did when I didn't want to get hurt. I avoided thinking about it. I'm working a case here, Mike. Do I bunny rage into your office whenever I feel like it?
Bunny rage?
Never piss off a jackrabbit, I said, turning back to the mess of papers I'd left on my desk. They'll cut you.
Cole, Ichiro, Mike, do you even know what Ichiro means?
I turned in my chair and glared at him. You follow enough baseball to know. It means first son. That's what he was to her. She left us, Mike. She fucking left us with our asshole father and walked away.
We don't know what happened between them.
It was a weak protest, but the best one Mike had. Neither of us knew what went on between our parents. Ichiro might, but he wasn't on my buddy list at the moment. We happened between them. I shoved the chair back, its wheels squealing across the floor. Her sons. And now you want me to go, what, sit around the fire and make s'mores with the kid she had after us? The kid she raised but couldn't be bothered to drop us a fucking letter about?
That wasn't his fault.
Mike's chin came up, thrusting forward to challenge me.
He's our brother, Cole.
Don't you want the one you've got? What, I'm not good enough? Too gay? Too fucked up? I shot back. So you're what, you're gonna go with the new one? What, he's straight, got kids, has his shit together? Maybe he plays golf and he can hook you up with some connections in Tokyo. I'd gone too far. Even as the words left my fucking mouth, I knew I had gone too far. Mike reeled back a step as if I'd punched him in the stomach, and all of the emotion drained from his face.
Fuck you, Cole, he said,
not without some heat. His words were a calm, thin line, drawing something firm between us.
I did not deserve that.
No, you... Fuck, Mike. I reached for my brother and winced when he pulled away. Dude, I'm sorry. This is too fucking much for me to deal with, okay? You knew her. All I got were a couple of fucking pictures and a middle name I couldn't pronounce. What the hell am I supposed to do with a guy who had her around? Especially after
Barbara, our stepmother.
Mike crossed the distance between us and placed his hands on my shoulders. Pushing me back down into the chair, he leaned over to look me in the eyes.
Baby brother, I know what she did was shitty, and Dad fucked you up something bad, but none of that is Ichiro's fault. He didn't know that we thought Mom was dead.
I have a hard time believing that, man.
Cole, it's true. He's as pissed off about this as we are. He wanted to reach out to the brothers that no one would talk about. You're the one that's always on my case to be more tolerant. Why can't you find some of that shit for him?
Maybe. I ground my teeth. I'm just not fucking ready for this. For him. I need some time, Mike. Just some fucking time.
Time I can give.
Mike slapped me lightly on the face, stinging my cheek.
Just stop being a damn asshole about it.
Chapter 4.
I got nowhere closer on the Madam Sun case, having only the shreds of information I'd gleaned through what I could find on the computer, until Wong could email me a few reports on the sly. I wasn't going to find a connection between Mei Choi and Yu Jun Lee on the internet. Setting aside my notes, I stared at Claudia's empty chair and chewed on my lip. She'd insisted I hire someone to cover the phones for the few more weeks she'd be out, but seeing someone else in her chair would feel like a betrayal of some sort. But I needed someone in that chair if I was going to hit the streets or needed to go on a run. But I wanted that person to be Claudia. I needed that person to be Claudia. Lacking that, I reached for the phone and dialed the next best thing. Her oldest son, Martin.
Hey, man.
Martin's voice rumbled, lightening slightly when he realized it was me.
Mama's asleep. I got her to take one of those pain meds.
Actually, I called to talk to you. I need some help. I outlined what I needed, and he listened, murmuring every once in a while. I'm hoping someone in your family might want to answer phones for me, maybe even a couple of the kids, even if it was just in the afternoon. Halfway through the conversation, I realized Martin might have reservations on sending another of his family to the exact same spot his mother had been shot. Something with sharp teeth began to gnaw on the insides of my stomach. God, I'd be lucky if Claudia wanted to return.
It'll just have to be until Mama feels better.
Martin interrupted my panic attack.
She's gonna come back to work. You can lay money on that.
I'd understand if she... I couldn't get the words out. The bossy woman who'd moved into my life was too big a presence for me to let go. I'd bribe her with more money and a hot limousine driver if I had to get her back, but I couldn't be certain she'd be safe. Swallowing my reluctance, I said as much to Martin. Martin was definitely his mother's son.
Bullshit, Cole. Nobody's ever safe. You did your damned best for Mama, and she's coming back. She'd kick my ass out of the way if I ever tried to even stop her. If any of the kids want to work for you, we're okay with that. You hear me?
Got it, I murmured, rubbing at my face. Just until she comes back, then.
Just until she can come back, he reassured me. Let me see what everyone's schedule is. I'll get back to you later, okay?
I hung up and leaned back in the chair. It squeaked once, then again when I rocked back and forth. It took me about 5 seconds before I was stir crazy. My phone still didn't have any messages from Jay, but that wasn't unusual. If I wanted some attention, I was going to have to beard that lion in his den. Of course, I probably want to do things to my lion that never crossed David's mind, I mumbled to myself. It was too early to drop in on Jay. He'd growl and shove me back out the door if I crawled into his space this early in the afternoon. Armed with the addresses of the crime scenes, I made the decision to sniff around the areas in case someone felt like talking. Even after a couple of weeks, something like a shooting was juicy gossip for a neighborhood. I closed up the office and made a quick stop into the house where Nico was appropriately worshipped, then left with a helping of tuna and egg. The arrival of cat food rendered me useless in her eyes, and she ate noisily, growling over her food. "You're welcome," I said to the cat. She did not deign to give me a reply I could understand, but it was pretty clear from the abrasive snarl she gave me that a coarse fuck-off was somewhere in there. I locked the door behind me, leaving her eyebrow deep in the stench. The City of Angels operated mostly on a grid pattern, with a few winding streets tossed in to fuck up a tourist trying to get from Hollywood to downtown. Adding to the confusion are three of the worst intersected freeways known to mankind. An innocent stranger to the molasses gridlock around the downtown exits could, unsuspectingly, take the wrong course among the 500 options available amid the endless construction, and find himself circling the area, hopelessly lost until he either ran out of gas or went mad from the hell he couldn't escape. Bobby was dead certain that many of the street people trudging through downtown, muttering to themselves, were actually motorists who'd finally abandoned their cars and set to walking the cement and steel desert until the end of their days. I wasn't altogether certain he was wrong. With this in mind, I kept to the surface streets to head to Koreatown. The Wilshire area is ringed by a predominantly Hispanic zone on three sides, with an affluent upper-class district to the north. Unlike most of L.A.'s neighborhoods, where the lines of demarcation were clear, rich on one side, poor on the other, Koreatown is a mishmash of middle-class and poor, dotted with high-end stores and fantastic restaurants. The best hole-in-the-wall food can be found in the oddest corners, but getting there is always tricky. I cut through Beverly Boulevard, turned down Western, and hunted down the address closest to me, the townhouse where Yun-Jun Lee allegedly surprised her murderers. The townhouse was located near an all-you-can-gorge Korean barbecue place Jay took me to once to meet his friends. A space opened up, and I parked on the street, then strolled down to get a feeling for the place. Like much of Koreatown, residences ran mostly to apartment buildings, with the occasional complex of condos to ease the monotony. The Lees lived in one such rabbit warren. It was a sans-serif U-shaped beige building, formed around a garden courtyard with tall trees, thick flowering bushes, and spots of lawn mounds green enough to look fake. To call the place condos was misleading. They were converted apartments, sold as individual homes, and probably now governed by a rabid homeowners association to dictate the height of the greenscaping. From the looks of the courtyard, someone at the HOA was hoping someone would stop by and film a scene from Jurassic Park 5 in its murky green depths. The Lees purchased a corner unit, giving them the spacious view of the complex's parking lot. It was one of the places farthest from the archway entrance I'd walked through, and I got halfway past the courtyard before I was apprehended by a plump, older Korean woman, wearing a floral house dress bright enough to blind someone wearing a pair of night vision goggles. Her short, salt-and-pepper hair was permed into loose curls around her mischievous face, and I gave her a short head nod to greet her. "Annyeong haseyo, Nuna." I slaughtered the hello, but she dipped her head down and grinned at me. Jay at least would have been proud that I tried, even as he winced and tried not to throw up at my pronunciation.
"Ace, how many more like it?"
I didn't know the word, but murmured something negative, and she tittered. She glanced toward the Lee place, then back to me.
"You are another policeman?"
"No, Nuna, I'm a private investigator. I was asked to look into what happened here." Schooled by Jay's admonitions, I avoided saying the word murder or death, letting my new companion lead the conversation.
"You lived near to her?" "One over, next door."
She nodded toward an orange and yellow door.
"We have almost the same names, so sometimes it confuses people. She was Yun-Jun Lee, but I'm Jun-Yun Yi. The postman always gets our mail wrong. My sister is scared the thieves were looking for me, but I told her she was silly. What do I have? No, Yun-Jun had much more to take, and that is why they were there."
"Have the police been back since the first time?"
"Fah! The police do nothing. Just like when that crazy man down the street blew up all the garbage cans."
Mrs. Yi made a face.
"She was nice, and her husband, Dong Juli, worked hard for her. It is very sad."
"Her husband's last name is Lee?" I checked my notes. Yun-Jun was in her early 40s, but I had no information on her spouse. I was guessing they were similar in age, or he was older. "Same last name, then?"
"They were cousins, but no children. That's a shame. Now he is alone."
A calculating look briefly flitted over her smiling face.
"Did he hire you?"
Someone was concerned about the incident. "Were you close to Mrs. Lee?"
"Yun-Jun was not to say anything bad.
I nodded, so both of us could silently agree that, while Yun Jun Li was a saint, her ignoble death necessitated at least a modicum of gossip to be shared.
Her family has money, more than her husband's, but she never complained about where they were living.
But? I seeded the conversation. There was always a but to gossip. It's what made talking behind a neighbor's back so delicious.
Always high class, you know?
Mrs. Yi sniffed the air, her neck wattle flapping back and forth under her chin.
She lived here like us, but she was very picky. Everything had to be just so. Very Korean. Hardly anything from here. Even the music she listened to. Very old. I was older than her, but her music was too old for me. More like my mother's.
I took it as an avenue to slide the conversation to where I needed it to go. So, she did a lot of things here that she'd do in Korea, like a fortune teller?
Oh no, she wasted so much money on those people she went to. Not just one, but two.
Mrs. Yi made a disgusted face that rivaled anything Nico gave me when I put chilled cat food in front of her.
Let's see, she saw Madame Sun and Gangjun Gyeongsi. I don't go to either of them, too rich for me. What is wrong with Madame Hejong? Nothing. So she is younger. We were all younger before.
She went to two fortune tellers? I frowned. Did they know about Mrs. Li seeing both of them?
Ha!
Mrs. Yi wrinkled her nose and slapped my arm. It stung, but nothing like being shot. I was thankful for that small favor.
You don't tell something like that, especially to those two. Sun and Gyeongsi butt heads all the time. If they see each other on the street, you watch them because one might start screaming at the other. Madame Sun is a better fortune teller, but some of the women, they like going to Gyeongsi. He says he likes men, so women like talking to him, but I don't know. I don't believe that. I know better.
They're rivals? I frowned, trying to make sense of what she was saying, and she scowled back, not understanding me. Sun and Gyeongsi? How come?
Madame Sun and Gyeongsi always fight for people. One says something bad will happen to you, and the other says something good. You go to the one that is right most of the time, until you get an answer you do not like. Then some people switch.
She shrugged, her shoulders a wave of purple and pink hibiscus flowers. Do they tell fortunes a different way? I had no idea what qualifications made a good fortune teller, or even how to go about choosing one. It wasn't anything I'd ever thought about, but I had a feeling I was going to get a crash course in it soon.
No, the same way. Sun and Gyeongsi come from the same teacher, a very famous fortune teller in Seoul, Gong Chung-hoon. Gyeongsi was here first, then Madame Sun moved to L.A. with her son. Stole a lot of his clients.
Mrs. Yi scowled, obviously disgusted by their behavior.
Gyeongsi wasn't happy when she came. Everyone knows they fight, digging into each other like centipedes. Why would you go to someone like that to tell you how to live your life?
Madame Sun having a rival changed things. I couldn't imagine anyone killing a couple of women to warn clients off of another fortune teller, but people have done crazier things. Do you know if they gave her conflicting information? Maybe she was going to choose one over the other?
Ugh, if they were so good, why didn't either one of them tell her not to get murdered?
The woman flattened her lips further into a thin line.
No, she needed to see both of them, in case one had information the other one didn't. I don't know if they knew she was seeing the other. Probably no. If they knew, they would make her choose. Neither one shares. They refuse.
Do you know where I could find Gyeongsi? I pressed lightly. Maybe he spoke to Yun Jun before she died. I know she had an appointment with Madame Sun that morning.
He is easy to find. Easier than Madame Sun, but I don't know his address. She says she only takes people who knows one of her clients, but that is a lie. She takes everyone. She is just trying to hide that her place is in a bad area. Kyung-si sees people in his home. He has a front room he uses to greet people. You can find him there.
I extracted myself as quickly as I could. Walking around the building, I cased the place as if I were a burglar. Situated on the second floor, the Lee's home wouldn't have been my first choice if I was looking for quick cash. So the cops thought they saw no sign of forced entry at the front door. I recalled what Wong told me, but I wanted to check things out for myself. Only other way in and out would be to go over the balcony. A pass-through walkway connected the central building to the parking lot behind the building, and its cool darkness was a balm after the muggy dampness of the courtyard. The Lee's balcony was, in reality, more of a high-walled burp of a cement outcropping, a typical feature in Californian mid-80s apartment architecture. Since the apartment overlooked the parking lot, anyone climbing up onto the second floor would have been spotted, in the daylight hours, by anyone coming or going. Covered in thin stucco and painted a light sand, the walls were chipped and white where stones probably flew up from a lawnmower and struck the coating. Pressing my sneaker against the wall, I tested its grip on the stucco. The sprayed-on faux mud crumbled under my weight, streaking the paint white where my shoe dug in too deep. Crouching, I examined the wear of another mark on the coating. From the sharp angle, it appeared to have been made by something hard, rather than spongy like the sole of a shoe. But its edges were weathered, softer than the scrapes I'd gouged into the stucco surface. The walls around and near the Lee's balcony showed no signs of having been scraped or gouged. The stucco coating above me was the same weathered hue as the rest of the building, and I couldn't see any sign of powdery debris beneath the balcony. From the appearance of other abrasions, it didn't look like the building's maintenance man would have been rushed to repair the damage. Whoever the cop sent out here was a frickin' idiot. No one climbed up there. It had to be the front door. I climbed out of the apoganthus planted around the edge of the building, shaking a stray purple bloom off of my t-shirt. So, either they picked the lock, or they had a key, because no way in hell they got in this way. Ah, Wong's gonna be pissed. I'd have to check out Gungjun Gyeongsi and whether or not Mei Choi was as much of a double-dipper into the fortune well as Yunjun Lee. I double-checked my notes. The psychic's name was familiar. Other than sounding like a district in Seoul, I'd heard that name before. Recently, if the whispering in my mind could be believed. Son of a bitch. Gungjun was Mei Choi's maiden name. I jotted down the connection, drawing a dotted line between Choi and Gyeongsi. It could be a coincidence, since there were only about 250 total Korean surnames, and while not Park, Kim, or Lee, the three used by nearly half of all Koreans, Gungjun could be one of the more commonly used. If Gyeongsi was related to Choi, then there was my connection to Mrs. Lee. I pulled my phone out and found that there were a hell of a lot of fortune tellers in Koreatown. It seemed like everyone's nutty Aunt Esmeralda dried a bunch of newt eyes and hung up her shingle to peer into a cup of tea leaves. I found Gyeongsi by accident, using a phonetic spelling of Gungjun, and praying for the best. I was memorizing his address when I noticed a missed text from Jay. Frowning, I scrolled through the message, wishing Jay had called so I could hear his voice. "Busy, I'll try to call you later in the middle of something big," he'd sent. "Might not be home. Please feed the cat." Ha! Cat's been fed, and if I know you, you haven't been. I gave myself a fist pump. Looking at the time, I figured I'd give him a couple of hours before I descended on him with some food. I messaged back that I'd bring him kaibi and rice, and then slid my phone back into my pocket before he replied with an argument. With the phone out of sight, I could plead ignorance. "I'll drop by once I'm done talking to Gyeongsi the Magnificent." Trying to get anywhere in Koreatown is solely dependent on parking. Street spots are an urban legend. Usually tantalizing openings turn out to be driveways, or painted red by the evil SoCal parking gnome for no reason other than to thwart people looking for a place to put their car for a few hours. After circling the block for 5 minutes, I gave in to the inevitable and pulled into a garage structure. The last time I'd left the Rover in such a structure, I'd been shot at by a client's deranged ex-lover and forced to use an old metal hubcap as a frisbee to bring him down. With that in mind, I paid a valet extra to park the Rover and told him I'd be back in an hour or so. Gyeongsi's place was a rarity in the district, a standalone bungalow tucked into the back of a stack of quadplexes. The one-story, flat-roofed structure appeared to have once served as the rental office before being converted into a residence. More of that thin stucco covered the outer walls, this time painted that curious shade of salmon pink that some idiot decided looked Southern Californian. It was a color used by many large housing developments, saturating the landscape with its bromide and vomit hue until common sense prevailed and construction companies went back to a more reasonable sandy brown. At some point, an enterprising owner stretched a wide, covered porch across the front of the place, painting it a sharp white. It did little to mute the pink. If anything, it made the bungalow look like a bonus stop in a game of Candyland. A few metal wind chimes hung from the porch's supporting beam. The dull singing coins were alternated by wind socks made of rainbow threads and a couple of spinning wings flamingos, the afternoon's light breeze turning them about in a slow waltz. A large sign above the steps announced to any visitor that they were in the presence of the famed Gyeongjun Gyeongsi, blessed fortune-teller and purveyor of futures. I assumed the Korean below extolled Gyeongsi's virtues. This assumption continued when I was further inundated with a magazine rack full of leaflets, all printed in a now familiar circle and hash mark writing Jay used to mark his projects. An open placard hung behind one of the glass-paned windows framing the front door. A bell clanged when I stepped in, bringing my arrival to the attention of an overly pretty young man sitting behind the receptionist desk. Gyeongsi's reception area ran the entire front length of the bungalow, with only a single doorway covered with a beaded curtain leading into the shadowy cool in the back. Painted a muted bamboo green, the front room was decorated in modern California Zen, with the perquisite water fountain sitting on a side table, and motivational artsy posters urging readers to release their inner child and embrace their peace. Judging by the receptionist's youthful appearance, Gyeongsi also liked to embrace hot, sexy twinks. Dressed in blood-red skinny jeans and an overlarge T-shirt, artfully draped off of one golden shoulder, he slinked around to greet me. He was cute, a perfectly packaged sip of Korean beauty. Poems could have been written about limpid pools or wind-swept mahogany locks, all with him in mind, and he certainly was confident in his sexuality, especially when his thigh brushed across the front of my jeans. Surprisingly, nothing in me tingled, not even when he slid his hand up my upper arm and squeezed. My cock seemed to be off doing Sudoku, and the only growling response my body had was my stomach, not so politely informing me that my sole meal that day had been coffee and two purloined choco pies. If there was any question, it had been answered. Apparently, I was so deeply in love with Jay, the young man with his soulful brown eyes and plump mouth did absolutely nothing for me. Hi. I was a master of conversation, mostly with myself, but still, master. I'm looking for Gyeongjun Gyeongsi. I'm an investigator. I was hoping I could ask him a few questions. Oh, I was hoping you were a new client. It would be nice to see someone in here besides dried-up Ajuma. Mr. Fluttering Eye's smile waned. Did you have an appointment with Sunbei? No, I was hoping he could fit me in. I ignored his snigger. Does Mr. Gyeongjun have an opening? It was an entrance any drag queen would have been proud of. The beads were flung back for effect, their clatter a soft drum roll to herald his arrival. I don't know what I was expecting. Perhaps someone as coolly elegant as Scarlet, or maybe even a warm grandfather dressed in a cardigan singing about neighbors. Instead, I got a plump Korean man dressed in an orange silk shirt, tan jodhpurs, and a red beret set at a jaunty tilt on his balding head. I'd always wondered exactly what angle jaunty was set at, and now I knew. He gave me a once-over that had me wondering if I was about to board a flight or was suspected of smuggling heroin balloons up my ass. I wouldn't have been surprised if he'd snapped on a pair of pink rubber gloves and told me to bend over. Gyeongjun Gyeongsi was true to life, breathing embodiment of every gay stereotype I'd ever heard of. So it was certainly no surprise to me when he dipped into his magic bag of double entendres and purred, "Oh, dear boy, for someone as beautiful as you, any opening I have is all yours." Chapter 5. Does that line ever work for you? Being sarcastic to a fortune teller didn't earn me a lightning bolt from the heavens, so the man definitely didn't deal out instant karma. I smirked, giving Gyeongsi a once-over. He smirked back and winked. Up close, he looked both older and smoother than I expected. I thought he used makeup to achieve his youthful appearance, a suspicion verified by the thin dusting of foundation and powder on the collar of his shirt. "No, it never does." He threw his head back and laughed, exposing his very white teeth. "But I keep hoping someday it will. Come, come, let me take you someplace more comfortable, detective. Terry, make us some coffee, please." Gyeongsi gave me a sly look from under his lashes. "Unless you'd like something sweeter?" "Actually nothing, I'm good." I thanked Terry and followed a pouting Gyeongsi through the beads. A small, dim hallway led to the back of the bungalow. Gyeongsi turned right at the first door, but I could see that the hall continued down a few steps to open up into his private quarters. I couldn't see much beyond the half-door fabric curtain, but from what I could make out, the man really liked eye-bleaching colors. If I thought the outside of his bungalow was spasm-inducing, the yellow-green walls peeking out from between the slits in the fabric were sharp enough to cut. The meditation area, or whatever the room was called, mimicked the front room, with a cool wash of soothing seagrass walls and enormous chairs. They were cut low, and while comfortable, when I sat down, my knees struck the edge of the teak coffee table the men probably used for his readings. Gyeongsi smiled apologetically as he sat across from me, reaching over to pat my arm when I grabbed at a pair of candles before they fell over.
"I am so sorry," he murmured, stroking at the back of my hand. "Most of my customers are shorter. Their legs are not so long. Maybe you'd like to go into my living room instead?"
No, I'm good." The last thing I wanted to do at the moment was to cross that fabric barrier, even if it meant I could get a better look at the man's living space. I wasn't sure what I was more scared of, being put into a compromising position on the man's couch, or my eyes bursting from the flood of colors leaking off the walls. "I only have a few questions. I don't want to take up too much of your time."
"Anything for the police?"
Gyeongsi inclined his head. Again, I did not correct him. People often told the cops more than they would share with a private investigator, Ms. Yi aside, and I'd take any advantage I had in getting Gyeongsi to talk. I used to wear a badge. I kept telling my conscience that, but it snickered back at me. "I'm here about Yunjun Lee." As I spoke, his face turned tragic, a mask of sorrow so deeply carved into his skin I was afraid it would stick that way. "I imagine that you've heard of her passing." I did hear. Bad news always travels fast. He made a steeple with his fingers. If it was supposed to make him look wise, I wasn't seeing it.
Terry, my assistant, lives near Yunji. He informed me of the troubles visited upon her family. I sent her husband my regrets. I am sorry to say that I saw nothing in her future that has told me of her death. I divined the I Ching for answers, but so far nothing has been revealed to me. I'm not sure what I can tell you.
It was easier to just lay my metaphorical cards on the table, especially since my knees seemed to hone in on the one in front of them. Mostly, I'm wondering if you knew Mrs. Lee was also seeing Madame's son. Did she share that with you? There was the barest flicker of his eyelid. So faint, I would have missed it if I hadn't been looking for it. Nothing else in the man's face changed, not even the beatific smile he'd plastered on his face. The light in his eyes dimmed, and his nostrils twitched, before he tightened his grin further and shook his head.
"No, I did not know that,"
Gung Si murmured. His hand shook when he withdrew it from my arm.
"She must have been troubled far more than I thought."
"How often did she see you? Can you share with me what she was troubled about?"
"Normally I would say no, because anything a client says to me is in confidence, but she is no longer with us. I will do anything to help."
He wiped the spare beads of sweat forming on his forehead, nearly knocking his beret off.
"I would see her once or twice a month, but we spoke of so many things."
Anything you can tell me is fine. What did she speak to you about, mostly?"
"She would come to talk to me about her marriage sometimes. Yunjun's husband felt she spent too much money. They did not have children, and she sometimes would shop to make herself feel better. She felt it was her fault they did not have a son. He wanted her to be more frugal. He would get angry with her sometimes."
As a cop, I had seen women, and some men, beaten to almost a pulp, turn around and swear they loved their spouses too much to press charges. The reasons for the beatings ranged from overcooked food to a new dress. Many of the arguments were started about money, and a few ended in death. It wouldn't be beyond belief that Mrs. Lee's murder came at the hands of her own husband. "Did he hurt her? Did she tell you anything like that?"
"No, he loved her. He would never do that. She might have spent too much money than he liked, but he would only scold her lightly. She had a good husband. He would yell, but it wouldn't go beyond that,"
Gyeong Si insisted.
"Wasn't it decided it was a robbery? That's what I was told."
Nothing's been ruled out." That was the truth. I didn't want to rule out anything until I was sure the deaths were merely a coincidence. "I just, want to make sure every base has been covered. Tell me about Madame's son. What you can, I mean." I brought my employer into the conversation. If the two were rivals, he'd want to dish dirt about her. But Gyeong Si wasn't taking the bait. Shaking his head, his frown turned to an apologetic, almost bashful smile.
"I have no quarrel with Madame Son. We were both students of a great man, Kyung Chung Hoon. She is a sister to me."
"So you're not bothered Yunjun was seeing her as well?" Gyeong Si gave me another practiced, saintly smile.
"Of course not. Sometimes a person can discover only so much about themselves from seeing another fortune-teller. Yunjun sought out Madame Son for some reason. I am certain she would have told me about it if she needed to."
His entire livelihood was based on his ability to read people and present them with the image they wanted to see. If anyone was skilled at packaging himself, it was Gyeong Si. From his appearance to his mannerisms, he projected the friendly and safe, wise counselor. I wasn't seeing the real man, I was sure of that. I played the one card I hoped would shake off the man's mask.
"Are we almost done?"
Gyeong Si glanced at a clock on the wall. I have an appointment soon. Almost done.
I decided to play the trick I had up my sleeve. It wasn't an ace, but if it made him flinch, then it was at least a face card.
Did you know a woman named Mei Choi? She was the victim of a carjacking. You might have seen her as a client?
He cut me off before I could finish.
No, I don't think so. I thought maybe you would, since her maiden name was Gang Jun.
I shrugged as if it weren't important. I thought maybe she was a relative or something. This time, there was no hiding his flinch. It rattled his face, a visual tick undulating across his cheeks and down to his mouth, rippling his powdered flesh. Gyeong-si fought to control his features, but the rattle spread, widening his eyes and bringing a gasp to his lips. This time, his perky beret lost its battle against gravity and tumbled to the floor, a spread of red felt on a woven tatami mat beneath the coffee table.
"It's a common name. Koreans, we have so many of the same names. Who is to say if we are related? Now, excuse me, I need to meditate before my next appointment."
He sputtered, but his eyes remained wild at the edges, even as he regained his placid mask. He stood, taking more than a few steps to the door before I could even get out of my chair.
"Terry will see you out. Please feel free to contact me again if you have any more questions."
Oh, yeah, there was definitely something there. I couldn't push. I wasn't actually a cop, so threatening to drag him down to the station would have been just that, a threat. I picked up his beret and paused at the threshold before he could fully shove me out, his hand on the door to close it behind me. Handing Gyeong-si his hat back, I leaned closer, as if to gain his confidence. "Anything you tell me, I can promise to keep confidential. Is there something you'd like to tell me? Are you afraid of someone? Maybe whoever killed Yun Jun? Or Mei Choi?"
"Goodbye, detective,"
Gyeong-si hissed as he lightly pushed me out of the door.
"Give Terry your number, please. Please excuse me. I have to prepare."
Finding Terry seemed like a good idea. Gyeong-si needed to protect his interest, but Terry looked like the kind of guy who was only interested in protecting himself. There was a good chance I'd get more out of him than I did his boss. The problem was, Terry was nowhere to be seen when I walked out into the front room. I caught a whiff of cigarette smoke coming through one of the side windows, descended the steps and sought out its source, assuming it was Gyeong-si's receptionist getting a drag in before the divine Mr. G came out to look for him. All I had to do was follow the smell, and I found Terry huddled up against a storm drain spout, inhaling as much of a menthol cigarette as he could in one pull. What Gyeong-si coughed up wasn't much on the surface, but there was definitely something brewing under the man's skin. Mei Choi hit a nerve, but only after I revealed her maiden name. Strange I'd get a bigger hit from Mei Choi's name than his rival's. It was something I'd have to chase after. As soon as I shook Terry down for information, and hit Jay up for some loving, there was a split second when walking up on someone, when their face is bare of all artifice. What I saw in Terry's appealing face was cynicism and a weariness I'd only seen on whores way past their prime. There was a tightness to his face, a thin layer of disgust with his job, his life. Hell, maybe his underwear chafed, but something was ruffling Terry's perfectly gelled feathers. His dark eyes were hooded, and he tilted his head back slightly so that a swirl of smoke obscured his lips when he exhaled. It was erotic, and obviously staged so often it had become a habit. He must have used that gesture countless times to pick up guys at a club. If I'd met him a few months ago, I would have bitten at the lure, but a checkup on my cock told me it had apparently moved on to reading War and Peace or watching Wheel of Fortune. Either way, it couldn't be less interested in the lean, handsome man draped against the wall in front of me. This in-love thing kind of sucks, I muttered, stalking up to Terry.
Hey, can I, borrow you a second? Terry straightened up, stubbed out his cigarette on the sidewalk, and tucked the butt into a sun-bleached soda can. Giving me a nod, he pulled his pretty Asian boy act on, slithering it over his face and body like it was a one-piece bathing suit, and he was about to be painted on a World War II bomber. "Hello again." From the raspy come-hither in his voice, I expected him to wend his body around my legs, demanding to be scritched behind his ears. "What can I do for you?" Having been eye-fucked before, I had my thanks-but-no-thanks smile on the deck. Pitching it out, it hit home, and deflated Terry's ego gently. He wasn't really interested. I was just the only warm-blooded male in his orbit, and since he'd figured out I played for his team, I should have been a sure bet. I wasn't, but it didn't mean I didn't appreciate the mental reach-around. "Hey, Gyeongsi said I should leave my card with you." I made a show of patting my pants and grimaced. "Ah, but I think I left them at my desk. How about if I give you my cell, and you can call me if he remembers something about Yunjun Lee that might be of interest?"
"That would be great."
Terry wasn't taking the no thank you to heart, sliding up to press as much of his body against me as he could. His hand brushed dangerously close to my inseam, and I ducked, slapping at the air as if a bee were buzzing by me. Moving away a few steps, I put enough distance between my uninterested dick and Terry's wandering fingers. "Thanks, really, anything you guys could tell us would be great." I tore a page out of my mini-notebook, scribbled down the number to my office, and handed it to him. I waited a heartbeat, then looked down into Terry's face. "Between you and me, I wished Gyeongsi told me more. I got the feeling he knew a lot more than he said." Terry rolled his eyes at me and tapped a cigarette out of his pack. He stopped and glanced at me.
"Do you mind if I..."
"No, go ahead," I assured him. Resting my shoulder against the outer wall of the bungalow, I glanced back to the front door, as if I expected Gyeongsi to come barreling out. Dropping my voice down to a whisper, I said, in what I hoped was my most seductive tone, "Anything you want to tell me?" I didn't have much hope for my seductive voice. I couldn't get the cat to come to me even when I had an open can of white albacore, so I nearly choked on my tongue when Terry began to sing.
"About Gyeongsi or Yunjun?"
Terry brushed a bit of ash from his arm. "Because I can tell you a lot about him."
If you want to talk about him, I'm happy to listen," I promised.
If someone asked Claudia to roll over on me, she'd knife the guy before he could finish his sentence. But apparently, Gyeongsi did not inspire the same loyalty. It said much more about Claudia than it did about me, but I wasn't going to argue with Terry's lack of commitment.
"You're not a cop, are you?"
He assessed me again, the blatant sexual interest in his eyes changing to something more cunning, more suspicious.
"Now that I think about it, you don't dress like a cop, and your hair's too long."
"No, I'm not a cop, but I am a private investigator," I admitted. "I was hired to look into Mrs. Lee's death. Gyeongsi's name came up, so I thought I'd come by to ask questions. Someone knows something they think is really small, but it's the missing piece to a puzzle. I was hoping Gyeongsi might have heard or seen something that could help." Terry spat on the grass, aiming away from my feet.
"Shit, he doesn't see anything but himself. He's an ass. I can't believe my mom told me to take this job. I don't care who knows what I think. There's a job I might get. It pays more, and I don't have to deal with his shit every day."
Terry scoffed.
"He's not even gay, you know that? He fakes it because the old ladies like it. He even screws some of them, too. Someone who knew him back in Korea told me he said it's to release their inner beauty. It's all bullshit. I'm glad my mom sees someone else. I don't want her around him."
"Was Yunjun one of the women he hit on?" Terry's teeth worried at the tender skin of his lip, and I had my answer. I prodded gently.
Did her husband know?
No, I don't think so. I'm not really sure if they were doing it, he said, shaking his head. She didn't do anything with him last time, but she was pissed off. She ran out of her last appointment, and Gyeong-si came out of the back after her. He had a big handprint on his face. I guess she decked him.
Did he try to stop her? Did he say anything to threaten her?
No, he saw me and stopped.
Terry shrugged.
Gyeong-si told me he saw something disturbing in her future, and Yun-jun got upset and ran out. I knew it was bullshit, but I need the job. He only hired me because people would think he was having sex with me. Like I'd touch that.
How long ago was that, when Yun-jun ran out? He named a date and time that chilled my blood. Yun-jun slapped Gyeong-si across the face, and an hour or so later, died at the hands of an intruder she surprised in her home. There was no such thing as coincidences. Not really. Someone knew Yun-jun had an appointment with Gyeong-si that day, and hadn't anticipated her walking in the door. Her moment of outrage and fidelity to her husband killed her. And I thought my love life was complicated. Chapter 6. I stopped at one of the 24-hour jjigae chains in the area. While their assorted tofu soup came with shrimp eyeballs and legs, that kaibi was incredible. I did a takeout order for two servings and a side of specialty mandu, deep-fried dumplings made with kimchi, pork, and tofu. The motherly woman behind the counter told me to sit down, pouring me a glass of hot green tea to sip on while I waited. A couple of banchan dishes joined my tea, and she urged me to nibble, probably to fatten me up for something nefarious. Picking at the braised jalapenos dipped in red chili sauce, I dialed up Bobby.
"Hey, princess."
He picked up after a couple of rings, his husky growl hoarse from years of screaming at criminals to stop or he'd shoot.
"What you need?"
"Why do you think I'm calling to ask you for something?" "I was, but I didn't like to be called on it. Well, not at least without getting a hello first."
"Because it's near the end of the day, when you should be heading for that pretty Korean piece who for some reason thinks you're hot enough to fuck. If you're calling me, then you need something."
"Fine. Fuck you too," I muttered. "Then yes, I need you to do something for me." I ran through Gyeong-si and his gay-for-pay fortune-telling business. I got to his exploiting his clients for sex, and Bobby whistled in disgust.
"Fucker," he spat. "Tell me you're asking me to break his legs."
"No, sorry," I replied. "What I'm hoping you can get is some info on the Lees. See if anyone's been called out to the apartment on a domestic. Everyone says her husband's a saint, but she was unhappy about a few things. I'm wondering if he found out about her frequent trips to Gyeong-si and knew about the asshole's reputation with the ladies. His real reputation?
Maybe the guy on the case is chasing down the same line," Bobby pointed out.
"If he is, then great. If not, I'll toss it at Wong to chase down." The hot tea did nothing to wash away the sweet burn of the braised jalapenos, but it was enough to take away some of the sting. "I don't think Madam's son had anything to do with this shit, but something's up. My gut keeps nagging at me."
"The same gut that took a couple of bullets?"
"Those hit my ribs and chest. My stomach escaped unscathed," I retorted. "I've already promised Jay I wouldn't get shot again. Anything I find, I'm throwing at Wong and then walking away."
"You just remember you said that, princess, because if not, he's gonna stomp your balls to dust," Bobby warned. "Let me make a couple of calls and see what's up. You focus on getting into your boy's pants and forget about stirring up trouble. I'll call you later."
"Don't mind me if I don't pick up." My order arrived on the table, and I slipped the waitress enough cash to pay for the meal and leave a healthy tip. I'm gonna go feed Jay and see if I can't take his mind off of the work for a bit. The drive to Jay's studio was long enough to make me more impatient to see him. Traffic tightened around me until the rover and I felt like a blood cell trying to squeeze down a hardened artery. From the clusterfuck at one intersection, it looked like Los Angeles ate only fried food covered in cheese and an extra helping of bacon. I maneuvered the rover around one of the bloated ground zeppelins the city calls a transit bus, broke from the pack, and zipped down a side street. Forced to move following an explosion that leveled his old place, Jay found a new studio a few miles from my building. With the cost of housing in Los Angeles and his refusal to move in with me, he ended up in a former auto parts store someone had converted into a triplex. The store's parking lot had been large enough to build a narrow apartment building, but there was enough room behind the thick-walled triplex to park. Windows cut up high into the cinder block walls were a feeble attempt to aerate the building, but the city was not known for its cool winds. Luckily, the landlord left the industrial-grade air conditioner on the place's roof, or I'd have packed Jay's things and tossed him into the back of my SUV. I parked the rover behind Jay's Explorer and locked the car up. The entrance to his place was near the street, a small gesture of privacy given by the wooden slat fence built along the sidewalk. He'd taken the long rectangular space at the back of the building. A good choice, given the two square studios in the front were nearly shoved into the butt of the apartments in front. Faded yellow and red paint flaked off the side of the building, a reminder of its former glory, providing antifreeze and oil to the masses. A scatter of ash sat near the front door, evidence of a troubled Jay using the small patio area as a smoking spot. The faint odor of cloves clung to the space, a fragrant and recent echo of my lover's infrequent bad habit. As much as I adored Jay, he was next to impossible to get to answer the front door if he was busy. I'd had entire conversations with him sitting next to me as he processed photos on his laptop, only to have him owlishly blink at me when I asked him a direct question. While he spent most of his time at my place, the studio was his niche of independence, somewhere he could slink off to and work without my intrusion. Well, usually without my intrusion. I tested the doorknob and was surprised to find it open. Jay was a habitual locker of knobs. Even the bathroom wasn't safe from his compulsive barricading the world out. But stranger things had happened than him leaving his front door unlocked. He'd fallen for me, after all. I opened the door to the heady fragrance of green tea and buttered popcorn. It had been a while since I'd been to the studio. We spent all of our time at my place. Our place, really, since his cat seemed to have gained custody of the bed when we weren't in it. The front part of the cinderblock studio was dedicated to Jay's photography, and a U of light boxes and low tables took up much of the area. A smaller space in the back of the rectangle was cordoned off by tall bookcases, and a pressure rod hung with glittering plastic beads served as a door between the bedroom space and Jay's working area. He rarely slept there, using a queen mattress set we'd plopped directly on the floor as someplace to take a nap while he waited for something to process. His kitchen area was a long counter against the wall facing the alley, with a microwave hot plate and a double-wide industrial sink. The current owner left the concrete floor as he'd found it, sealing it with a thick urethane. The place was a dismal gray, even illuminated by the soft white lights Jay installed everywhere, and the thin sunlight struggling through the high windows. But it was his, and Jay wasn't going to give it up so he could set up house with me. I still had his cat, and my bed was way more comfortable, so I figured I had enough incentive for him to come sleep with me every night. So far, it seemed to be working. The smell of popcorn came from the microwave, and Jay stood with his back to me, shaking the popped kernels into a bowl. A red and gray striped beanie was pulled down over his head, and an oversized Oakland Raiders shirt hung from his slender shoulders, probably stolen from my dresser. I lost a lot of clothes to Jaymin, but I liked seeing them on him. He said it was like wearing me around him. I couldn't imagine anything that could make me happier. Except